and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics and beyond make a lot of noise. It's episode 147, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me this week are the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And it makes me laugh every week, but I'm still going to struggle every week. Yeah, that. Do you know what? That's the same voice you've been using to say hello for the past few weeks, Dan.
It gets laughs.
It gets laughs. So yeah, it never gets old. Never gets old. Much like our very own psychosexual Dr. Zaius. It's Mr. Tony Esmond.
Hello.
that was the most timid hello you've ever done, Tony.
I know.
Yeah.
I've had a grumpy day. I've had a bad day.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
I'm glad to be here because earlier I was a bit grumpy. And then you came on and you told me some boob jokes and we cheered up, didn't we?
Yeah, all right. Yeah, we've had a good old time. We've just had a lovely interview with a guest we're going to announce and talk about in a bit.
You'll hear that in a minute. Yeah.
You'll hear that. But what you're going to hear now, do you know what they're going to hear about, Tony?
Oh, my God. Is it they're going to hear about Comic Con?
Well, they're going to hear about the fact that we all saw Infinity War.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
We're not going to spoil it for anyone, are we?
Absolutely no spoilers. But if you could describe how you feel about it in one word, what would it be, Tony?
Love.
Dan?
Love.
Okay.
Boner.
Oh, God, that's a difficult one.
You didn't warn us with that one, did you?
No.
You
didn't
warn us these things.
Awed, I'd put.
And mine would be jizz. So, yes, we all very much liked it.
Disgusting.
And that's all we're going to say about it. Because, to be honest, it's a film...
Well, I say we can say a few things as long as we don't talk about specifics.
Okay, go on then.
It's is it 2.5 hours running time?
Long, isn't it? It doesn't seem long, but it is.
It doesn't seem long because everything just rockets along.
Yeah.
It's such a fun watch and it's kind of... It feels like a payoff from all the films that have come before it.
Yeah.
If someone came into this without seeing the other ones, you'd be like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
But to be fair, if Doctor Strange turns up on the screen, you know who Doctor Strange is if you're a comic book fan. You don't really need too much of an intro.
For what it had to do, it did it perfectly. And it did something that a lot of other sort of studios, or like franchises or universes, couldn't probably even begin to attempt. Because as well as putting all those characters together, the story was bigger than any of the characters.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. And Thanos... is an absolute boss.
You really
you get to know him. Let's not ruin anything.
Yeah.
But I will say this, go and read some fucking comics that feature those characters.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Very much so. So
one thing at the end of they do that thing at the credits, so you gotta wait around. And they put this one right at the end where like all the credits are rolled and it's like, oh, this is getting a fucking pain in the ass now.
Grumpy,
of all the Marvel, with the Marvel films, I've just had enough of that sitting through the fucking credits.
Yeah.
Just do the cast, then put that fucking extra scene in, and then all the people that worked on the background shot stuff. Sorry to all those people, but you know I don't really care.
Yeah. Bear in mind, one of them is our friend. But yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
It's weird because my mate started working for a production house, post production. I saw his name float up the screen.
So, oh, did you? Oh, cool. What post-production house do you work for?
I can't remember what it's called. Somewhere up... it's in London. Yeah. It's because his name's... I won't tell you surnames. His surname's very far down the alphabet, but he's called Adam, and he appeared first one on the top left of the block of text.
Oh, so okay. Yeah, I was trying to scan all that for me, mate. Exciting. Nice. I'll tell you what I like doing. I like doing really early cinemas in the weekend because you don't get any annoying children in them.
I saw the midnight screening there was cheers, there was a round of applause at the end.
Wow, okay.
Yeah,
was that for you?
Yeah, because they knew I was there basically.
Yeah, you're a celebrity now, aren't you? You've been on another podcast.
On Vince.
And I just stood there and went, see that popcorn? Absolutely smashed it,
you know. Did you stick your knob in it again or?
Yeah, that's how I smash popcorn. Oh, when I said it, it was like the worst. You know when you say something and you think, I can't take that back.
Is that sweet popcorn? You go, is that sweet popcorn? You go, no, salty.
Well, it can be sweet and salty. This is already going wrong.
We've been on for an hour and a half already.
Yeah, that's true,
right?
True. Yeah. I quite like putting Maltesers in my popcorn.
You're some kind of pervert.
Why? What's wrong with that? Not salted popcorn, because that's just savages. But, you know, yeah. Cinema popcorn. But
there was one young lad, must have been about 6 or 7, and I would say that film's not right for a 6 or 7-year-old.
That's too scary, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that anyone dies in it. Not giving anything away. Not giving anything away.
Yeah. It's kind of like, it's you can't give away anything, but I don't think that film's appropriate for that age.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would stick pins in Gamora's shit. Do you know what I mean? I would fucking, you know what I mean?
Tony.
I wonder what colour it is.
Oh. You do know she's not real.
What?
Sorry. Spoilers.
Yeah, anyway, let's move on from India.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, we liked it. We hope you all enjoyed it if you saw it. And if you haven't, good luck to you avoiding spoilers, because you really do need to go into it completely.
Here's how bad it was for me. I didn't go on the internet. I thought that's good. And then I stopped for a coffee. I went to an event in Gosh, and I purposely just went into the event for a short amount of time. And I sat in a cafe nearby waiting for it to start reading, and I put headphones in. So that I didn't hear anyone talk about it.
Yeah, I put, like, you saw that list of about a dozen blocks on Twitter.
That was genius, Dan. That was absolutely genius.
I've done that a couple of films, and it's kind of paid off.
Yeah.
But if you're thinking of see it, definitely go and try and, I know, you go and see it before fucking people start talking about it and get spoilers and stuff, because it's inevitable, really.
Yeah.
And I think you want that experience.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want that to be taken from me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, it's the culmination of 40-odd years of reading Marvel comics for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In a way, you know.
I was explaining to someone, like, when this kind of film comes, it's like reading one of those old school big events with all the characters involved, and you've got your favorites, and you see them interacting with other characters, and it's a bit different than Marvel, because I think a lot of people have already seen most of the films, but it's great seeing all the characters coming together, and they interacting off of different personalities, and I really enjoy that kind of stuff. Like, it's weird to think there's like the Guardian bits of the film, which feels like you're watching the Guardians of the Galaxy film, but then they've got other characters in it from other films, and they're the same character. Do you know what I mean?
Like, tonally, it jumps about a bit, but it works for me.
I mean, the Guardian bits feel like you watch is the straight out of the Guardians of the Galaxy film, and the other bits, it's great.
Do you know what also works for me?
Oh, no, is it Comic House?
It's Comic House. Yes.
If you want to read a superhero comic all about with loads of character deaths, that's on there too, thank God.
Vanguard's on it. Yeah, he's back.
Yes. If you love comics like we love comics, and we know you do, and if you haven't checked out already, then check out comichouse.com. It's the place to go to get your fix of independent comics.
There's loads going on there at the moment, aren't
there?
Tons,
yeah.
It's like non-stop.
Yeah. I've got a list.
If you look at comichouse.com, you can find there's loads of issues that you can get, like, hard copies from. You can buy direct from, like, the creators, essentially. And they also do them digitally on the Comic House app, which is amazing. Now, what are the new ones they've got at the moment, Dan?
Well, the entire T-Pub back catalogue's been uploaded.
Ah, yeah.
So stuff like Twisted Dark, Tabitha, that's on there now. Also more Marcosia titles, Dark Lies, Darker Truths, Dark Mists, and then we've got some Esther. It's a new miniseries from Mark McCann, Ryan Brown and Simon Bisley, and the first six pages of the series up on the app. It's got a nudie woman on the cover, so getting on that. And then we've got Phantom Lady Zero, Resurrection Men by Ennis Paul and R. Donald, which is a fantastic comic.
Yeah, we love that. Yeah.
Tales of the Mystery, Cloud Busting, and many others.
Nice. Yeah.
I was a bit disappointed to see that wasn't a book about Kate Bush, but it's similar, isn't it?
Yeah.
Are you a fan of Bush, Tony?
I love the Bush, man. Oh. Yeah, I love it. I actually am a big fan of Kate Bush. Yeah, I think she's all right. I saw that live gig. Me and Lambo went and saw it. That recent one she did. That was good. It was a bit of weird acting in the middle of it. Got a bit arty. Made me bum ache a bit, but otherwise it was good, yeah.
Yeah. But that was just you guys doing that, though, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah, I thought so. But on comichouse.com... That's going to come back to haunt me. Yeah, on the Comic House app, you'll find all of that stuff digitally. And if you sign up, it'll only cost you £3 a month, which is the price of a normal comic, weekly comic. You get access to all the comics you want. There's a 14-day free trial. So don't just take our word for it. Go to comichouse.com and find out more today.
Yeah.
So there you go. Now, we had a guest on this week. Well, thank you.
Was there somebody at the door?
Oh, don't start that. No, look, we'll be here all night. No, this week we had the distinct pleasure of talking to a man that was responsible for quite a few old school books, weren't they, Tony?
Right, mate. Yeah, this is like a lesson in comics history and how to be a good editor. I'm going to put it that way, and a little bit of talk about trombones.
Indeed. So what more can you say? So yes, we got to speak to the mighty Barry Tomlinson, and yeah, let's not waste no more time. Here's the interview for your listening pleasure. Right, this week we're very pleased to be joined by someone who, as an editor, was responsible for some absolute classic titles that were on our newsstands every week. Names such as Tiger, Eagle, Roy the Rovers, and let's not forget that fondly remembered horror anthology Scream, which we're all fans of here. Yes, it's our pleasure to welcome to the show Barry Tomlinson. Hello, Barry.
Greetings.
Hi, Barry. Hey, Barry. You're right.
I always like it when people say greetings as an introduction.
Yeah.
Really classes up the place.
Thank you very much.
Well, unfortunately, you have listened to some past episodes. You were telling me yesterday, weren't you, Barry? But I apologise for that.
No problems.
Yeah. Now, just to set the scene, we actually met in a sort of cyber way, not in a sexy way, Barry, but in a cyber way, by you giving away loads of your annuals, didn't you? You had a load of annuals. You used to live St Albans way, didn't you? Not far from me.
That's right. I used to live in St Albans, and my son's been living there ever since he was born. And a lot of my stuff was stored at his place, and the time came for a clear out. So I put onto Twitter, anybody want these annuals?
Yeah. And I was just staring at my phone as it appeared, luckily. Yeah.
Along comes Tony Esmond.
Yeah. I don't know if anyone remembers, but it was during like the terrible snow as well. So it was like I literally took my life in my hands with a car full of annuals.
Worth it.
It was very fortunate. You lived close to there.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was great as well. This we'll talk about them as we go along, but the books, mate, amazing.
Yeah.
The weight on the back helped the traction of the car, didn't it?
Yeah. Helped me get a bit ill or two. Yeah. Yeah.
You didn't find any old banknotes hidden away in them?
I'm not saying. Now we mostly chat on this podcast. We chat about a lot of things, a lot of nonsense mostly, but we mostly chat about Small Press. And I'm interested to learn. And having read your book recently, which I'm sure we'll get to as well, that you started in the small, kind of a Small Press magazine world due to your distrust of trombones. Now, is this true, Barry? I'm not sure. Sort of.
That's right. It was when I was doing my national service.
All right.
One of the guys who was stationed with us had a trombone, and he practiced on it day and night. And there were lots of protests about that. And I thought, well, I'll start the Anti-Trombone League. And I rushed around the barracks and got lots of people to sign a petition against trombones. And it was so popular that I had the idea of doing a magazine called the Anti-Trombone League magazine. And I'd never done any sort of journalism before, but this proved to be very successful. All the guys in the barracks liked it. So I decided then to involve some famous people in the Anti-Trombone League. And right. I discovered I had a skill for getting people to do things.
Right. Brilliant. So I know that you got some cracking names involved in that magazine. The one which we just mentioned before we came on air was Peter Sellers. That's amazing.
I was a great fan of The Goon Show and of Peter Sellers. And when I wrote to him and asked him to join, and he replied that he would do, and he sent me lots of fantastic letters over the years full of tremendous humour. And many, many years later, I met him in another sort of guise, wearing another hat.
Yeah.
And he was a bit moody at the time, but as soon as I mentioned to him the Anti-Trombone League, he remembered it, and we had a tremendous interview with him.
Brill.
Amazing.
And got a lovely photograph of him reading Tiger.
Which is the one, I think he apologised because he was a bit sort of dishevelled, wasn't he? Or it, what back then would have been seen as dishevelled, I suppose. These days, nobody would blink an eye, would they? You know?
Yeah, he was growing a beard for a film he was going to star in.
Ah, okay. Interesting.
I have to Google this.
Yeah, I'll post some on the Facebook page actually of this because you've printed that, if you don't mind, with your permission, Barry, in the book of yours, didn't you? Yeah.
Yes, I was very embarrassed that there was a comb sticking out of my top pocket of my jacket. I've got all my smart gear on and I ruined it by the comb.
You're such a hipster, Barry.
Yeah. Oh, I know. At the end of the interview with Peter, I asked him to tell me a musical joke.
Right.
Which he did. And I didn't get it. When he did the punchline, I didn't realise it was the punchline. And he had to explain it to me. Because I'm not a very musical person.
Right. Okay. Didn't the sport always been your thing? Because I know we'll get into this in a minute, but... coming out of the army, I take it you didn't do like a, as a lot of people do now, like a publishing degree or a, you know, design degree or anything like that.
No, I started writing some humorous stuff when I came out of the army with absolutely zero success. And I had the world's biggest collection of rejection slips.
Brilliant.
Then I started to apply for jobs in journalism.
Right.
Again, without any success, but then somebody told me that Fleetway Publications were advertising for beginners for children's comics. So I applied for that job and I got it.
So for those that don't know, Fleetway was kind of two big powerhouses in the UK. It was Fleetway in England and it was DC Thompson in Scotland. Would that be right? Yeah. Or
that's right. That was too far for me to go, so I had to do Fleetway.
And what was your first? What did your first job entail? Was it with Lion? Was it your first job?
The first comic I worked on was Lion. First of all, they made me assistant to the script editor, which was very interesting, but I really wanted to work on a publication. So the first one I worked on was Lion Comic.
Right.
Under the editorship of Bernard Smith, who taught me all the basics of being an editor. And I always stuck to his system throughout my time on the comics.
Yeah. Now, I think people who see comics these days see a lot of T-shirts and baseball caps, you know, but back then it was there was a lot of suits and lunches, and was it that sort of environment? Was it, you know, you wouldn't go into the office without a shirt and tie on, for example?
Yes, I would do, yes, a suit, shirt and tie. The long business lunches came much later when I'd been promoted a few times.
you mentioned a few of them in the book. They did make me chuckle. Yeah, is that where the real business got done, was it, do you think, over lunch?
A lot of business got done over lunch, yes, because the contributors, the authors, would come up from long distances to meet us in London. So it seemed only fair to take them out to lunch. We could relax, talk over ideas, and it worked very well.
Right. I know you mentioned, that we're skipping ahead a tiny bit, but you mentioned Doug Church as a big favourite guy to have a drink and a chat and a bit of a plan with. And yes, I know Pat Mills mentioned him when we had him on talking about 2000 AD.
Yes, Doug had the same sense of humour as me, and he had some great jokes, which I still use. And he was a very talented art man, and he did lots of good designs for the comics, and I worked very well with him.
So he worked across a load of titles, did he? Because I know he worked in 2000 AD. Did he work on, like, Battle and stuff like that as well? Or
yes, he did. He was sort of art editor or assistant art editor to the whole group of boys' comics.
Yeah. Now, editorship back then, and now everyone in the world spends their lives just staring at the devil's window, don't they? Just like looking at things on a screen that don't really exist. But
the devil's window, I love that.
But back in your day, it was literally you. I remember you say in your book anecdotally that you bought the best magnifying glass you could buy, so it would be like everything would arrive either on the post or by person, I suppose. And your editorship was literally on the page there, was it? Or
oh, it was very much with the old manual typewriter.
Yeah.
And if you wrote a script in those days on your manual, to do any alterations to it was a horrendous job. And I would be hammering away on this manual typewriter for hours. I've got very arthritic fingers now because of that manual typewriter. Nowadays, you can write a script and alter it online on your computer. so easily, but in those days you couldn't. If you wanted to alter something, I had to type it out on another piece of paper, then stick it back onto the original script.
Oh Lord!
Oh God!
It took a long time, but I think it taught you to get the script right the first time.
That's referred to as cut and paste back then, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It was literally cut and paste. I still got the tins of Kel gum to prove it.
But there's anecdotally as well, you speak about people bringing in pages and you having to measure them with a ruler and stuff like that. Was that quite, you know, so it was literally on the paper, you'd be cutting bits out and stuff, were you?
Yes, indeed, yes. I mean, my first job working online, one of the first things the editor said to me was, as soon as the artwork comes in, measure it to make sure it's the right size.
And right.
Of course, most of the artwork was drawn twice the size it appears. Yep. So there were great big packages of artwork on the go all the time. We'd receive the artwork from the artist, then send it to the lettering artist. So that would be posted off, in many cases, to the lettering artist. So there were great parcels going backwards and forwards all the time.
There must have been a hell of a weight to everything.
God, yeah.
It was, yes.
Yeah.
I can remember when I was working on sponsored comics, I had to take the whole comic, each issue, in to the copyright holders for their approval. So it was a great big package you were carting around London to get approved.
Yeah.
No, it's, no sending on
a zip file. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
the zip was around the package of artwork.
Now, for those that don't remember Lion, it had stuff like in it, like Robot Archie, and the Spider was in it as well, as I recall. Is that right?
He was later on, the Spider, yes. Robot Archie was in it when I moved on to it. And Captain Condor was the space hero.
Right.
And stories like Sandy Dean's School Days.
Sandy was an artist, was he not? Is that right? A Scottish artist?
Sandy James was an artist who did a lot of work for the comics.
Right.
For my group particularly, he did masses of work. Yeah. Very nice guy. Hard-drinking Scottish gentleman.
So who were the big names that you were dealing? Because, I mean, it wasn't till much later that credits came in, wasn't it? So if you read any of these old comics, you have to kind of dig a bit online to find who did each story, didn't you?
Mm. Yes, I mean, most of the publications I worked on didn't give credits, which I think was extraordinarily unfortunate.
Yeah.
When I took over, worked on the comics, there were no credits. And I carried on with that tradition, but thinking about it, I wish I had insisted on credits much earlier on.
Yeah.
And the secrecy was amazing. When we got a script in, we had to get a pair of scissors and cut off the name and address of the scriptwriter before it went to the artist.
Really?
Oh, okay.
Because the management did not want the artist to know who the writers were in case they were poached by DC Thompson.
Interesting. Because these comics were selling big numbers, so presumably they were doing well out of it, the writers and artists, were they, to a certain extent, you know?
Yes, the writers got a sort of fairly average fee, but at that time I thought the artists were getting enormous sums of money. Looking back, it wasn't that high. And of course, once they'd done the work, the copyright was purchased from them, so stories could later be reprinted without the author or artist getting any fee at all.
Yeah. There's a couple of names I'm going to run by you, but who were the big names that you remember from back in the early days of Lion and Tiger who were clearly writing stuff that was really popular, but not necessarily the kids would have known who they were?
No, I mean, Tom Tully was the first name that comes to mind. He wrote an enormous amount of stuff. He wrote, for example, the Johnny Cougar Redskin Wrestler story.
Ah, that is one of my favourite stories from back in the day, really. I mean, I'd love to see that back. It's incredible, you know.
Yeah, I was very flattered that when Tom was very busy, I took over writing that story. And it's one I really enjoyed writing.
So he's a Native American wrestler, isn't he? Who would also sort of on occasion investigate crimes and stuff like that, wouldn't he, as well, you know?
Yes, he was a Seminole Indian wrestler. By Manitou, or by the spirits, you would say, that start in most sentences.
Right, cool. Yeah.
At the start of most sentences.
Amazing. Tom
Tully about that. He was a very prolific writer, did lots of good stuff, and wrote Roy the Rovers, of course, for many, many years.
Mm. Yeah. Fred Baker, was he another name that?
That's the other name I was going to mention straight away, because
right.
the stuff that he wrote, like stories like Billy's Boots and yeah. Hotshot Hamish,
which is extremely popular, isn't it? Hotshot Hamish was, you know, almost Roy the Rover's popular, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah, indeed. He was challenging Roy quite often for number one popularity spot. But yeah. Fred could write scripts brilliantly. I mean, Hotshot Hamish, the fact that Fred was English, he wasn't Scottish, but he brought a lot, so much Scottish elements into that story. And then he was teamed up with an artist called Schiaffino, who was from Argentina.
Right. And
the two only met once. They worked together for so many years. I was actually there when they met. I mean, Schiaffino didn't speak any English, and Fred right. Baker didn't speak whatever they speak in Argentina. So we had to get everything translated.
Yeah.
But it worked very well, that combination.
So how did you discover like those sort of artists from Argentina or Spain or, you know, that kind of
thing? Spain, wasn't it?
Yeah. How did they get involved with these UK publications?
Well, we always had a guy who was in charge of dealing with foreign artists, and whoever that person was would go out to South America or to Italy or to Spain to sort of see what artists were there and sign them up. And we had an agency in South America. We had contact with an agency in South America, and one in Italy and one in Spain. And by having that, we got some very good artists working for us.
Yeah.
But that's not to take away the fact that there were lots of good English artists, British artists as well.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll definitely get onto a couple of them. But Jose Ortiz, you edited him quite heavily, or quite a lot, didn't you? Or
yes, he did lots of stuff for us, for Scream and later for Wildcat comic.
Yeah.
Very talented indeed.
Yeah. Yeah, and he did a lot of Vampirella, and I think he worked for EC Comics as well, didn't he? He would be a name that an American audience would know as well compared to some of these names, so. I think. Mm. Yeah.
I think so. But talking about artists, I mean, Joe Colquhoun.
I was just about to mention him. Yeah, marvellous.
Is a magic name, because the stuff he did on Charlie's War, I think, is probably the best artwork that's been in the children's comics. The amount of detail you put into it.
Yeah.
I've heard you say before that that's the best story that's been in children's comics.
Oh, I think so, yes. I mean, the artwork was so detailed. It's so well written, the script by Pat Mills.
Yeah.
Joe really interpreted it very well. And of course, it was Joe Coffin who wrote the very first episode, drew the very first episode of Roy the Rovers.
Oh, I didn't realise that. Oh, okay. No. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yes, I knew he'd done Football Family Robinson was one of his as well, wasn't it?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. But once again, lots of details in each picture. And I think the amount of work he put into it really exhausted him. And I think his early death was because he put so much into his work. And I think as editors, we didn't realise we'd phone him up one day and say, can you make the story an extra page this week? And he'd do it, but we didn't realise the amount of time it took him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's an amazing art, yeah.
I mean,
a brilliant artist.
One of my favourite artists, I believe it's... I want to get this right. I've been trying to look it up, but Vanyo,
I know
he worked on Stormforce, which obviously they're very close to my heart. But also did he work with you on Death Wish as well?
Yes, he did all the Death Wish stories.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of my favourite artists of all time. There's such a crisp line work he's got, and I can look at a page and I'll recognise his artwork straight away. I think of the time, he was definitely my favourite artist around. And now, looking back on it, it's a joy suddenly sort of rediscovering all this other work that they had done on other books. You know, I'd love...
It was a pleasure to write a script which you knew he was going to draw.
Yeah.
Because you knew it would come back. A brilliant piece of artwork. But yes, it was easy to write a script for him, and a pleasure.
Yeah. So you could write whatever, and then you knew, well, you don't have to give him notes. There was no backwards and forwards. You just wrote him something, and then you just knocked it right out of the park.
The script would be translated.
Yeah.
Before it went to him. But he always interpreted the scripts brilliantly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love
to. Did you find that was something that you did a lot with, Barry? You had to send a, you'd send a script off and it would just come back drawn, or was there a backwards and forwards with the artist between, you know, that you'd have to middle between the writer and the artist at all?
No, it would go to be translated, the script. Of course, every picture in the script would have a description for the artist. So the artist would know what to draw. Mm.
Because it was translated, did you have to put extra detail into that script so you made sure that everything was covered?
No, I didn't. I just wrote a script as I would write for a British artist. And the translator would deal with that. And then the artist himself would interpret what the translator had done. Mm. And it just seemed to work very well.
Oh, okay.
Nice. There's another writer I wanted to ask you about, and I wondered whether you'd ever bumped into him. Was Jerry Siegel worked on Lion. I'm not sure if he worked on Tiger, did he? But he certainly worked on Lion,
Yes, he worked on Lion after my time on Lion.
So right.
I didn't have any dealings with him at all.
Oh, okay. I just found it strange that the creator of Superman, you know, was working on British Weekly Comics. It's a strange how he found himself there, isn't it? You know.
Mm. Yeah, that was a great scoop, wasn't getting to work for Lion. But as I say, it was after my time, and I was tigering by that time.
Okay, yeah. So to move on, so you worked on Lion, and then was your first editorship on Tiger, was it, Barry? Or...
That's right, yeah. I joined Tiger around about 1964.
Okay.
And the editor of Tiger then was David Gregory, and he taught me to be an editor with a capital E.
Right.
He was the one that taught me about long lunch hours. I'm very grateful to him for that.
Yeah.
In 1969, David was invited to work on a new football magazine, which was called Shoot.
Yes.
So he moved from Tiger on to Shoot, and I was very fortunate that he recommended me to take over as editor of Tiger.
Right. People who don't realise that Tiger ran from 54 to 85, that's a hell of a run for a comic, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. It was a very popular comic. It lasted a long time. And I was looking earlier on today at the 30th birthday issue of Tiger.
Yeah.
And there's a two-page spread in there, people saying happy birthday to Tiger. And the scope of the people that wrote these messages, oh, I'm just looking. Shall I read them out to them?
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
There was Big Daddy. Jeff Boycott.
Right.
Jeff Boycott, Brian Johnson, Henry Cooper, Ernie Wise, Jack Charlton, and then you got people from the world of politics. There was a handwritten message from Neil Kinnock when he was leader of the opposition.
Wow, yeah.
And from David Steele when he was leader of the Liberal Party.
Yeah.
So Tiger was popular with all sorts of people, big sportsmen, top politicians.
You talk about that a bit, because I think you mentioned that when you were an editor of, I'm going to say Tiger, you weren't given a publicity budget. There was no sort of budget to go travel around and promote it. So you would basically find people who were famous and had a fondness for the comic and get them to write for it. So you talk about the door open of being, not that you worked for Fleetway, but the fact that you worked for Tiger in order to get in to see Jeffrey Boycott, I think I've heard you say before.
Yes, yeah. I went to Lord's Cricket Ground, and in those days, when there was not a match on, Lord's Cricket Ground was like a castle. You couldn't get into it.
Right.
It was closely guarded, and I went to the entrance and said, I've got an appointment with Jeffrey Boycott. And they said, who are you from? I said, from IPC Magazines, which was the largest publishing house in Europe. And they said, well, no, you can't go through. So I kicked around there for about 20 minutes, kept going back, trying to get through the barrier. And they said, no. Then eventually I said, well, look, I'm from Tiger. I said, Tiger, why didn't you say so? Come on in. that was the magic word. The biggest publishing house in Europe didn't mean a thing, but Tiger did.
Yeah, we're all little boys, aren't we, really? Let's face it. Yeah.
So, yes, we couldn't get publicity. I couldn't get any publicity to pay for, so I thought I'd write things into the story which would get us publicity.
Yeah.
And we did this on Roy the Rovers when he was in Tiger. And Roy the Rovers became the first boys comic hero to get married.
Right, okay, yeah.
And that produced a lot of publicity, and he became the first boys' comic hero to become a father. Once again, more publicity.
Yeah.
And everything Roy did, I sent out a press release, and the media reacted really well, and we got so much free publicity over the years.
Mm.
I'm trying to think of a modern equivalent where a comic book character has made the news. Last time I recall was maybe when Superman died. There might have been another one after that, but
yeah,
that used to be a thing, didn't it? Comic book characters making the news, what they got up to, but...
Yeah, it really did, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, when we had Roy shot in 1981.
Wow. was that the time that the guy off Dallas got shot? Was that, I'm going to say...
It was very similar to that, and it was just afterwards.
Oh, right.
I won't say where I got the idea from. But we built in a lot of suspects into the story.
Brilliant.
And when he was shot, once again, it was on television, radio, and all the newspapers.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So we followed that up by asking Sir Alf Ramsey, who'd won the World Cup for England, to take over Roy's team. And Sir Alf agreed to do that. Once again, because the character meant something to people, and Sir Ralph was happy to become manager of Melchester Rovers with the Roy the Rovers team, and that again was good publicity.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because I mean, we kind of think that sports and comics don't really meld these days. If you're into football, you're not really a comic fan. But kids didn't care back then, did they? It didn't matter to anyone, did it?
No.
We merged the two, really. You know, comics and real life sport together and sort of merge them, and there was a sort of vague line between fact and fiction.
And Roy was definitely one of those characters that transcended the page as well to become this figure. I remember when I used to read issues of it, and people would, it was almost like people would act like he existed, like he was real. He was definitely, say, he would be in the news, and people would talk about Roy getting married or this, that, and the other, like it's a real thing that's happening. And I think to have a fictional character reach that point is quite a special thing, and doesn't happen that often, does it, really?
Well, he was real. I'm surprised you said fictional.
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry Roy can't be here tonight, but Melchester Rovers are playing away, so he couldn't make it.
I tell you what, he's had a bloody good career, that boy.
Yeah, he's had a good run.
He'd be playing for Real Madrid now, or something, wouldn't he? He'd be transferred out into Europe by now. Yeah. I've no doubt, Barry. You know.
I think there's lots of possibilities there, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you always been a big football fan, or?
Not particularly. I always followed cricket closely.
Right.
But once I got involved with Roy the Rovers, then, of course, football played a big part in my life.
Mm.
Did you have to keep quiet, or you actually support? Because I know you're a big proponent of the fact that Melchester can be anywhere, can't it? It can be any part of the country. So
it's wherever you want it to be.
Yeah. Who's your actual team? Can you cough it to us, or?
Well, as I was born in St Albans, St Albans City Football Club.
Nah. So do you ever go down?
Yeah.
You ever go down to the terraces and sort of hear what people had said, and would that ever? You try and get that incorporated into the story. I imagine some of the comments. Oh, okay, nice one. So I thought some of the comments made by supporters might have been a bit colourful for a Roy the Rovers strip.
Well, I did take a life-size Roy the Rovers cutout down to the St Albans City Football Club ground. And he would stand in the press box looking out at the match. Which you won't enjoy it.
Yeah. There's been talk of getting one done for me. So when I can't make a con, they would stick me up at the table.
But that lasted quite well until one day, as I understand it, St Albans lost the game. And the manager at the time was so infuriated that he beat up Roy the Rovers and broke the cutout.
Oh.
The cutout was never seen again.
That'd be a sound around someone's house now. Yeah. Yeah. It'd be like when they tore up Wembley, when the Scottish tore up Wembley turf. They've all got bits in their garden, haven't they? It'll be seen somewhere in someone's shed. Yeah.
This is true. Yeah. There would be worth something, a bit of Roy the Rovers, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you try and parallel what was going on in the real world of football? Because I know football changed, didn't it, in the 70s and 80s? You had like a lot of violence, didn't you? It was quite newsworthy to talk about the violence on the terraces, but you also had a lot more money being injected into the sport. Was that something you tried to sort of go along with, or?
Yes, Roy did campaign very strongly against violence in football.
Yeah.
And he got the back end of the FA on that. And that campaign worked really well, I think.
Yeah.
But we were talking earlier about publicity. The biggest story that we ever ran was when Roy's wife left him. He was spending too much time at the football club. So one night he went home very late and there was a note saying, "I've gone home to mother."
Right.
Which we thought was a nice little bit to put in the story. But that day, the comic came out. ITN ran it on their lunchtime news. The BBC ran it in the evening. And all the television and radio stations latched onto this story and it became the biggest publicity campaign we've ever done.
Right.
No one would bat an eyelid at a footballer doing that nowadays.
They want to know why now, wouldn't they? They want to know something salacious that happened. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
If the wife didn't leave him, that would be news now.
Exactly. <Yeah. laughs> There's somewhere in the deep recesses of someone's mind at the moment. It's quite a salacious football comic, isn't there? You know.
Our minds.
Yes. Yeah. So how much did you have? Because, I mean, we move on to Roy the Rovers. Because I think at one point, Tiger became a sort of half sports, half adventure comic. And you took it along the avenue of being mostly about sports, or nearly or entirely about sports.
But yes.
Why was that, Larry?
I changed it to an all sports comic. But the first thing I did after becoming editor of Tiger.
Right. Any particular reason for that? Or
I just felt that some stories like Olak the Gladiator didn't fit into a comic which was mainly sport.
Right.
I thought the few stories that were left which weren't sport would be quietly dropped and we'd bring in sports stories in place of those. And that seemed to work very well because sport was and is very popular with young people.
Mm. Yeah.
So I thought we should reflect upon that.
I get you. Yeah. I mean, I've heard you talk about that and how the sports does that. Because the annuals at the time, that was it, right? You had two annuals. You'd have a Tiger annual, but you'd have a Tiger featuring Roy the Rovers annual. Was that the lead into his own comic, was it? Or?
Well, Roy became so popular in Tiger. It was always the top story.
Yeah.
When the management called me in and said, "Look, we want you to do a football comic along the lines of Tiger. What are you going to call it?" And I said, "Well, it's got to be Roy the Rovers." First of all, they said, "No, that's too long a title." I pointed out that News of the World was the same number of words, and that seemed to work quite well. But I got my way, and it became Roy the Rovers, which worked very well. First of all, we continued to run the Roy story in Tiger.
Yeah.
And also had a different story featuring Roy in the new comic.
Okay.
And they ran alongside each other for probably about 6 months, and then we quietly dropped Roy out of Tiger, and it caused no problem to the Tiger circulation. That carried on as before, and Billy's Boots became the top story in Tiger.
So that was almost like the equivalent of British Comics crossover event that you get now, you know, with Marvel Comics. You know, you ran two stories, and in order to read all of Roy, you'd have to get both comics for a while, presumably, you know?
Yes, you do. Tom Tully wrote both stories in Tiger and in Roy.
Yeah.
And that worked very well.
With a character's popularity, like you could say, same thing could be said of Dredd, as in that was like 2000 AD based, and then he went off to have his own title. Is that right? And then he could kind of hold, he could hold the popularity of the character.
Yeah,
but it's not very good at football, though.
No,
I can't see them getting on. I'll be honest with you.
Some infraction of playing ball games in public. I'm sure Dredd would look down on that.
Yeah. That was to never.
No.
Yeah. Why do you think sports comics worked so well back then? And you don't really see them working as well now. Any reason why, would you think?
Well, I think in the days when I was editing, the big thing in a child's life is when his weekly comic arrived through the letterbox with the morning paper.
Yeah.
There was very little to compete with that, the internet wasn't going, television wasn't going greatly, and computers were only just starting up. And I think one of the secrets with Tiger was that the dads used to read it as well. And quite often it was a race between the son and the dad who got to the comic first to read it.
Yeah.
So if you got dad on your side, he'd be quite happy to order the comic and have it delivered with the morning paper.
Yeah.
So it was good to have a comic which was a family buy.
Yeah. And also your comics weren't just comics, were they? They were, I mean, a lot of the annuals even you produced had very little comic content. There were, a lot of them were pin-ups and articles and talk about the sporting stars of the time, weren't they?
Yes. I introduced the Tiger Sports Star of the Year competition where the readers could vote for their favourite sports star.
Yeah.
And I thought this would be for the comic. And I was convinced that the first time we ran it, the first year, that a footballer would win it. But the football vote was so badly split. It was Ann Jones, a tennis player, who won it. I mean, not only was she not a footballer, she was a she.
Yeah, look at that.
Yeah.
So the following year, we decided to nominate people. And this narrowed the vote down. And
right.
The second year, it was a footballer who won it. That was Gordon Banks, the England goalkeeper.
Ah, cool. Right, okay. And
I presented the trophy to him, and we were chatting afterwards. And I said, what are you doing? Are you writing for us? And nobody. So off the top of my head, without planning it, I said, would you like to write for Tiger? He said, I'd love to.
Real.
So that instantly I'd signed up England goalkeeper, which was a tremendous scoop.
Yeah.
And on the train back from Stoke, where I'd presented the trophy, I had to work out how I was going to pay for this.
Imagine doing that now. He'd be thinking it'd be £1 million an issue or something, wouldn't he? Oh, but plus the fact that probably footballers aren't great at writing these days. I've got to tell you, they're a different breed now, aren't they?
Indeed. Yeah. Well, I worked out that if we took out 2 pages of picture strip, the money we'd save would pay for the article.
So right.
Gordon was the first of the real-life footballers to write for Tiger.
Yeah.
And from then on, we had a whole host of top sportsmen writing for the comic. And that balance between stories and features seemed to work very well.
And didn't you have Eric and Ernie write for you as well at one point?
Yeah, we'd had all these sports people writing for us. And I thought, well, why don't we go into show business? And the top names at that time were Morecambe and Wise.
Right.
So I approached them and we signed it in such a way that Eric would write for Roy the Rovers, being a football man.
Right.
And Ernie would write for Tiger. So we had articles by each of them in each of the two publications. And we did a lot of photos.
Did they ever write any comics at all?
Did they?
Ever write any comics?
Did they write comics?
Yeah, I know they wrote articles, but did they ever write any strips or anything like that?
I think there were some strips somewhere, but I can't remember where they were. They weren't in my publications.
Right, okay, yeah.
But that was
great. Didn't Eric live near you, didn't he? He lived in Harpenden or somewhere, didn't he, I think, as I remember.
He lived in Harpenden, yes.
It's only a couple of miles from you, isn't it?
Yeah, so I met him a few times, but it was Ernie who was the great enthusiast. He came to so many of our Tiger functions. Whenever we were doing a Tiger Sports Star of the Year presentation, he would come to the presentation lunch and present the trophy.
Brilliant.
And he was an enormous fan of Tiger, and that again worked well.
Yeah. So what other strips did you have in Tiger? What other things would people remember from back then?
In Tiger?
Yeah.
Fix up a copy. We've got Hotshot Hamish, of course.
Yeah.
Boy, the Rovers, first of all. Skid Solo. The Motor Racing Driver. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I remember that. Was Simon Secret one of them?
Simon Secret was in Boy, the Rovers.
Right. So Simon was kind of a cross between a footballer and the Bionic Man, was it? That sort of thing?
Yes. He was slightly bionic, yes. That was his secret.
Right.
Yeah, that was a Roy the Rover story. I'm pretty sure it was in Roy.
Right, okay, cool. Yeah.
Martin's Marvellous Mini was another Tiger story.
Now, come on, was that because you had a Mini? Is that the reason?
Of course, I had a Mini, yes. I just bought a Mini and I thought, well, this would be a great basis for a story. And I approached Fred Baker. And he wrote that for many years, and that was drawn by David Skew,
right?
Who was a fanatic for motorsport.
Okay. Yeah.
That was before David went on to draw Roy the Rovers.
So at the so as we sort of move along your timeline, if you don't mind, Barry, you became group editor, and then was there some kind of buyout of 2000 AD that got you involved in that as well, was there?
Yeah, when Roy the Rovers came along, I got the title of group editor of Tiger and Roy the Rovers. And then I was asked to produce a new football magazine called Top Soccer.
Right.
And I worked on that, did a dummy for the first issue, and we were just about to go to press when I was called into the boss man and told, you're not going to have Top Soccer anymore. We need somebody else to do it. And of course, I was obviously peeved by that. They had to find some way of keeping me happy.
Yeah.
So they said, well, you're group editor of Tiger and Roy the Rovers. You can have Battle and 2000 AD as well.
Wow. Okay. Did you find that was slightly out of your comfort zone from what you'd been used to up to them? Because they're, I mean, Battle and 2000 AD, both sort of edgy, punky kind of books, weren't they? Especially 2000. Yeah.
Yes, it was some. It wasn't one that I wanted in that sense, because it was running very well. It was being very well edited, and it didn't really need a group editor to get heavily involved in it. So yeah. I really left that to run as it was. And
Was it McManus was editing at the time? Was he?
Steve McManus was editing it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the story is that you wanted you suggested changing 4 or 5 page strips into 2 page strips. Is there any truth to that one, or?
Well, in 2000 AD?
Yeah.
I don't remember that at all.
Right, okay. It's a lot of comics gone by since then, isn't there, dude? Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember that. I don't remember interfering that much in that title, but long time ago, you know. It's a long time ago.
Back to the goons. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is the premiership of the editor at the time. Now, you'd, especially with Tiger and Roy, you'd become a character, didn't you, as an editor, which was before that hadn't really been seen. Is that right?
Yeah, I felt it was very important that the readers knew who the editor was.
Yeah.
When I was a boy, I used to read the original Eagle, and I knew that Marcus Morris was the editor of Eagle.
Right.
And I felt that it meant something to me that I knew who the editor was and I could relate to him.
Gave it a personality, as it were, sort of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then it got to the stage where comic editors just signed their editor's letter, the editor.
Yeah.
And I wanted to introduce the editor of Tiger and Roy the Rovers to the readership. And that happened to be me. So my photograph appeared frequently. My name appeared frequently. Which some people said that I was headline hunting for myself, but it wasn't
right,
the case.
Okay.
I wanted the readership to be aware who the editor was.
I see. Yeah, because
I think that worked very well, because today on Twitter, so many people get in touch with me who remember my name from the old days, and it obviously meant something to them that they knew who the editor was.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, if you've only got to look at Marvel around the same time, you had Stan Lee and then Roy Thomas, didn't you? You know, two sort of very visible editor-in-chiefs of that comic line. Was that something you ever looked to? Did you ever look to see what was going on in America?
No, I didn't. I was never involved in the American publications at all, never looked at them at all. I had so much to do in my own group that I wanted people to look at me rather than me look at other people.
Right, okay. Okay, yeah. So moving on then, so you've become the group editor that is involved 2000 AD in Battle, but I remember you said in your book that you actually talked Number 10 into letting them have a picture of Tharg outside Number 10 next to a copper.
That's right, yes. Yeah. We thought that would be a good PR campaign, and no matter what I asked for in those days, I seemed to get it. No matter how outlandish it was.
Yeah. Imagine asking for that now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To get through security would take a few months, I think, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it? Yeah. So you moved on to that, and also Battle. What you got any memories from Battle as well, Barry? From what was happening then? Because that ran, there was some amazing work going on there as well.
Oh yes, Battle, tremendous publication. By the time I took it over, it was struggling a bit.
Right.
Its heyday had gone, and really, most of my time as group editor of Battle was trying to save it and keep it being published. Because it did have Action Force in it at one time. But just after I took over, Action Force disappeared and went elsewhere.
Was that a licensing issue, was it?
Yes, the license was sold to somebody else.
Right.
So we were left with just Battle, which is when I created Storm Force to go into Battle.
Yes. Yeah.
To replace
now, we're talking. That's Vince's favourite comic, I'm right, isn't it?
I have such fond memories of that strip. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was good. It was good to be able to create the whole thing from the start.
Yeah. Yeah. I love all that. Like, I look at it now, and it is, it's almost an evergreen title for me now. It's one of those I need to, I rarely had those sort of like back issues that I desperately need to search through and get. And then when I suddenly remember Stormforce, I'm trying to go through and find every appearance of them now. And I love it. And the more I find, the more I love it. Do you find that, guys, when you buy like back issues?
Oh,
Yeah.
It's like a sad addiction that we've got, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the same with me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love Stormforce. And yeah.
Who was writing Stormforce back then? Remember?
I think I was, wasn't I? I wrote it. And then my son took over writing it. My son wrote under the name of James Nicholas.
Right.
And he wrote a lot of Stormforce.
Real. I met with your son when I picked the annuals up, and we talked some Ring Raiders and some Mutant Turtles he wrote as well, didn't he?
Nice.
Yes, I mean, it was slightly embarrassing in a way employing my son to be a scriptwriter, but the important thing was that the readers liked his stuff.
Yeah,
and the scripts that he wrote were always popular, so that was the most important thing.
Where did he start with you?
I was saying, you could always argue you've been raising him from birth for this job. So
he had dozens of comics given to him from day one.
I mean, that's what I'm angling to do with my son. So I can't.
Yeah. He'll take over the Vanguard mantle.
Yeah,
he'll be
taking over Vanguard.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a good idea, family tradition.
Yeah.
He wrote quite a lot, didn't he? He wrote in a large number of your titles, didn't he? I was chatting to him. We had a coffee when I went round, and we were sort of talking it through. And he wrote an awful lot of stuff, didn't he?
Yes, he was a successful writer. As I said, it was slightly embarrassing for me. But
right.
we started to give him a few scripts, and they always were popular, so we gave him more and more. And he was particularly good at adapting on the toy products.
Right, okay.
Doing things like Mask and Ring Raiders.
Yeah.
He would grasp the characters very quickly.
And, okay.
Write those scripts, which worked out well.
Yeah. Did you ever write for 2008 AD at all? Or?
Did I?
Write any filler issues, or you know, help out with scripts or anything?
I might have sneaked a script for Dread when it was in the Daily Star.
Ah, okay, yeah.
There was a problem getting hold of the regular script, so I did sneak one in.
Brilliant.
That's an exclusive for you.
It's nice to say you've written Dread as well, isn't it? You know.
Yeah. Oh, yes. It's great that you can write these sort of things.
There's got to be a crossover, possibly, for a future Dread story with a football game going on and him just backing up all the people on the terraces for mucking about, you know.
Surely there's that's been be. Done. That must have been done.
Must be something like that, mustn't there?
There'd be no crowd trouble with them.
Yeah, well, the Millwall Coldblow Lane just introduced Dread. Be fine. Yeah,
that would be good.
Yeah. So you moved from, well, you were still, I understand you were still at IPC or Fleetway, and then you had a couple more projects. And I know you were a big Eagle fan as a kid, weren't you? And then you decided to bring it back. Was that your decision?
Yes, I've been trying to bring it back for a long, long time, but eventually the management agreed. And then getting Eagle right the second time round was a really difficult task, because there were still a lot of people around who'd read the original Eagle, and we knew that it would be compared with the original one. So we came up with the idea of doing photo strips rather than drawn strips, telling the stories in photographs.
We
thought that was great because we thought that would be a good innovation. Children were used to watching television, they're used to seeing pictures.
Yeah.
So we would incorporate that by doing photo stories. And really, the readers didn't like it.
Okay. People forget how popular... There was a lot of sort of romance photo story. A lot of the girls' comics would use it as well around that time, wouldn't they?
Yes, it was much easier then because they weren't involved in great explosions and battles and things. It was very difficult before the days of computers for our photographs to relay a story which is set in space, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you were a character in one of them, weren't you?
I appeared on the cover of the second issue of Eagle.
Oh, okay.
There was a picture of Doomlord dominating the cover, and I was cowering in the foreground alongside Doug Church. Actually, we're talking about Doug Church, and he's also on there.
Oh, I must have a look at that. Okay. But wasn't there a sort of... Go on, sorry.
3rd of April 1982.
Oh, I'll look that one up. Yeah.
Those were the days, you know.
And well, wasn't there one about you? I seem to remember one in an annual about you ordering a cab or something. Who was that character?
Ordering a cab?
You're talking to a cab driver or something. There was a sort of a comedy one that you did.
I did a story which appeared in Eagle, which I thought was a comedy story without words, told in photographs.
Right. Oh, okay. Right.
But the management didn't like that.
Oh, okay.
That was called The Adventures of Fred.
That's the one I'm thinking
of. That's the one.
Yeah,
yeah. Tony talked about this.
We enjoyed doing that. It was great fun. Members of the staff taking part in the story and in the photographs. Mm. And I had a Hitler moustache and a dodgy old, dodgy old raincoat. And I enjoyed doing it. But I was called in one day and said, "This is rubbish. Take it out." So
right.
It had to go.
That's a shame, isn't it? If you're having such a laugh, you know what I mean? Yeah.
It's a shame when these things happen. Not often was I told what to do, but just occasionally it happened.
So what would happen with the photo stories? Were they written? I think wasn't Alan Grant writing Doomlord or something like that? Would he write the photo stories as well?
Yes, that they were written the same way, that instead of doing a description for the artist to draw, you do a description for the photographer to set up the photograph.
Right, and, I get you.
As I say, it was very difficult doing things like explosions and spacecraft and whatever.
Yeah.
Without the aid of a computer.
Even stuff like, you know, a misty avenue or something like that, you know, or even rain, if it wasn't raining or something, I suppose.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yes, it was difficult. And we thought it worked reasonably well, but the readership wanted drawn stories.
Yeah.
Much to the delight of all the artists that worked for us.
Yeah, I bet you. Yeah. God, yeah. 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 Well, that's where I was going with it, Nick, because you got Jose Ortiz came back, didn't he? And did The Tower King was one of them. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
That's a brilliant story. Gorgeous.
Did it
stuff.
Very well as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you had Dan Dare and The Return of the Mekon as well.
Yes. Dan Dare was never done in photo strip.
Yeah.
Was always drawn. Mm. And,
was that a big coup for you? Because I know you're a big Dan Dare fan, aren't you?
Yeah, I was very lucky to write the story for about 6 months.
Real.
Which went pretty well. It didn't lose any popularity for me writing it. But I used a technique which I'd seen in the original Eagle, where in the first episode of the story, Dan Dare wouldn't appear. And it would build up the story, and you're waiting for Dan to appear, and he would appear in episode 2.
Right.
And I used that technique, and the management read the story and called me in and said, "Why isn't Dan Dare appearing in this first episode?" So I explained to him what I explained to you.
Yeah.
They didn't like that idea at all.
Right.
And they didn't like the idea of some of the Dan Dare stories being set on Earth rather than in space. Again, this is what happened in the original Eagle.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
So I stopped doing Dan Dare after that.
Right.
And Tom Tully took over.
Right. I mean, was it? I mean, Pat and John Wagner have both talked about this. There was that real transition during this period from it being a business run by men in suits to being a creative industry. Does that make sense, do you think, Barry? Or
yeah, I think that all the publicity we got for Roy the Rovers and for Tiger helped to increase the status of comics.
Yeah.
They were rather looked down on before then, and a lot of programmes on television particularly would pull the comics to pieces. But because we increased the status of it, I think that stopped happening.
Yeah.
And I was very fortunate that the editorial director I worked for also had this plan to increase the status. And I think we managed to do that.
Yeah. I mean, people often talk about the sales figures back then, but they were huge numbers, weren't they, weekly?
Oh, yes. If you got below 300,000, you were starting to get worried.
Jesus.
That's like the whole of a month of Marvel Comics these days.
Yeah.
You know, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah, there were incredible. Wonderful circulations.
Yeah, yeah. And all the kids would read them and talk about them, you know?
Yeah, they'd swap them around. And as I say, the dads would read them. And the mums as well, sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the brothers and sisters. So it was a big thing.
Yeah, yeah. Have you kept most of your stuff, have you? Have you kept issues from when you started and stuff you've written? And
I gave all the annuals away recently.
Yeah, I did make a donation to the Dogs Trust. I'd like to point that out.
But just prior to that, we had another cupboard full of the weekly comics.
Oh, wow, okay.
I pleaded with people to take, and no one would take them.
Oh, no, I didn't see that one.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't think of going onto Twitter with that, to be honest.
Yeah.
And so they had to be disposed of.
Yeah. I know you put it on Twitter. I think 12 people replied in a minute or something, I think you were saying, pretty much.
Yes, yes. There was not interest in that.
Yeah.
But I've got some special issues, some first issues of various things.
Yeah.
Issues, I think, but to remind me of something.
Yeah.
So I've got a few of them hidden away in little box files here and there.
Nice. Yeah. And then let's move on a little bit. So the next one I wanted to talk to you about, which was, I mean, we say it's controversial, but it's not really, is it? In that by today's standards, was Scream.
Yeah.
AKA Not for the Nervous. did you
just
want
to... just when you thought it was safe to sleep in the dark.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay. Now that was a very well thought of comic in the same way that, you know, comics like Misty are like really well remembered and thought of.
Yeah.
And it ran for only ran for 15 issues. But did you bump heads with someone around that at all, Barry? Did you?
It was a very, very difficult one to do. It was a difficult one for me because prior to that, I'd produced comics which were parent buys. But this was something different. And I had to strike a balance. It couldn't be too much of a horror comic, but it had to be pretty strong.
Yeah.
So I worked on the storylines and the look of the thing for a long, long time.
But you'd always seized on stuff that was popular. So, you know, in days gone by, you'd seized on the fact that, you know, the sports, kids are into sports. So we got Tiger and Roy the Rovers and, you know, we got the new Eagle. And then Scream, what was it that provoked that idea to do a horror comic, if you see what I mean?
It was the management's idea to start with.
Okay, yeah.
And they approached me and said, we want you to do it.
Yeah.
So I did it. And then we produced the first issue. And I took it down to show a member of the management team. And it was a guy I hadn't worked with before. And he went through it page by page and ripped it to pieces.
Okay. What was his problem?
He thought it was too strong.
Right.
He didn't really like our presentation. And we had to go back and change it. And we had to do this with every issue. Each one we took was ripped apart.
Oh.
We take it away and try and repair it.
Oh,
and
God.
It got later and later going to the printer. And it suffered because of that interference, I think.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great advert for the publication that it's still thought of today.
Yeah.
You can go online and read about it, and people are still fascinated by the story.
Yeah, there's whole blogs about it, aren't there? I mean, I know I was about 16 at the time it came out, but I know you, Vince, you got fond memories of it as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I remember, like, I think that was one of the things. I want to say kickstarted my love of horror, but it was like my horror fix in a comic format because,
okay.
Well, obviously in the States you had the Marvel comics, you had the Tomb of Draculas and Swamp Things and all kinds, but
yeah,
you know there wasn't really much you could get on the shelves in the UK, certainly in the newsagents. So whenever I managed to get an issue of Scream, it was gold dust. I used to read it to death. Yeah, I love that stuff.
So some of the strips in that, you had the Dracula file, which was written by Jerry Finlay Day, who doesn't get enough credit, and I actually think is one of the best 2000 AD writers as well. Is he someone you knew, Barry, or?
Yes, he wrote a very good Dracula file, and Eric Bradbury did the art for it.
Gorgeous, yeah, top work.
That's probably the strip that is the most famous strip from Scream, isn't it? The Dracula file.
I think so. Yeah. And Eric Simon Bradbury. Furman wrote some as well, didn't he?
Sorry?
Simon Furman wrote some as well, as I understand.
Yes, he wrote some towards the end of Scream.
Right.
But Eric Bradbury was so well suited to that story. Again, I think he produced brilliant artwork. Yeah. I was very lucky as an editor to have such quality artists working for me.
Mm. Yeah.
And quality script writers as well. I mean, it was the peak,
yeah,
I think, for that sort of thing. And story like The 13th Floor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. Which is absolutely by John Wagner, and it was Alan Grant, but he was writing under a pen name, Ian Holland, wasn't he, as I understand it?
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
That brilliantly done.
Yeah, yeah. Did you read they did a new issue of Scream and Misty, I think it was. They combined and cherry-picked some stories and recreated them about a year ago, I'm going to say. Did you read that?
Yeah, no, I didn't read it personally because I sulked because no one sent me a copy.
Right, okay.
I refuse to buy it.
Yeah. I have to say the standout from that was the Dracula file, which was written by our friend Grognier McContry, and it really, really sort of brought it back to me how good that story was, you know.
Yeah, it was good. It was a shame that we couldn't finish the story.
Yeah.
Only having 15 episodes. We did a couple of Scream Holiday specials after that to wrap things up.
Okay, yeah. And the other one, a couple of the other ones in there was Monster, which was the first story, the first installment. People forget it's only 4 or 5 pages, and it was written by Alan Moore, as I understand it. Can you remember how that happened?
Do you know, I can't. I've been asked this before, and I cannot remember how it came about. He hadn't written for me in any other capacity or in any other title, and I just cannot remember how and why that happened.
Okay, it was a sort of Frankensteinish monster type story, wasn't it?
Yes, I can remember the story very well, but I can't remember the circumstances of him writing it.
Yeah, and then John Wagner took over, I think. Yeah.
Yes, I don't think it's a story we probably could get away with today.
Okay, right, good. We like those stories.
Mm.
Yeah. And the other one that I really liked was, I must go back and reread this, because I had sort of vague memories of it at the time, and it's probably something that Vince would like, is Terror of the Cats, which is an ill-fated experiment to harness the psychic energy of cats. That's a hell of an idea.
Well, I'm glad you said that you liked it, because that was the story that was really ripped apart by management.
Right.
They hated it. We had to scrap that after about 3-4 issues, I think.
What, because they should be afraid of their cats or something like that, do you think? Or?
I don't know. They just detested it. They thought it was badly put together.
Right.
And they wouldn't listen to anything at all other than taking it out of the publication. I'm glad you liked it. That backs me up. Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Who wrote Terror of the Cats? Can you remember?
It was done by someone, you know. Yes, it was Chris... Chris somebody. I've forgotten his name. Sorry, Chris.
Right, Chris. Yeah, we'll find out. Yeah, yeah. Yes. Okay. So what was it? Did it cause a bit of a sort of a media storm, did it, Scream? Was there a... Because it's only shortly after the sort of video nasty scare, wasn't it, I suppose, when everyone was up in arms about any kind of horror.
We didn't get any bad publicity at all. You know, we thought there'd be complaints coming in from parents and some things in the media, but that wasn't the case. It was... All the problems that we had with Scream was internal problems.
Okay. Yeah, that's a shame. Yeah, it's very, very well thought of. I know they started releasing volumes, haven't it? At Rebellion as well, I think, have started releasing trades of it now.
I think they've done...
Yes. It should have lasted much longer.
Yeah.
But the cover line, when we said not for the nervous, I think it applied to the editorial staff. Rather than the
Oh, good. Yeah. Imagine what they think of our anthology, guys. I don't think...
Oh, God. Lord, no, that'd never get finished.
So where did you go after that, Barry? Was it the Turtles calling to you around that time?
We did Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles from 1990 to 1993.
Right.
And that was very, very successful. We almost got to 1 million in circulation with that.
Bloody hell. Right.
We started off reprinting the American comic until we could get our artists and writers trained on it. Then we switched to an all-British lineup. And as I say, almost got to 1 million, which was a delight.
Yeah.
It won an award for launch of the year or something like that. And as editor, I didn't even know about it. It was only some months later that someone told me it had won an award, and members of the senior management went to receive the award. And as editor, I didn't even know about it.
Okay, yeah. People forget that in England they were called Hero Turtles, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Yes. We had to change, well, not we, but in England, it was in Britain, it was changed to Hero Turtles rather than Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, people are afraid. Remember, you could buy like martial arts weapons in the back of magazines back in the day. I remember me and the boys at school ordering nunchucks and all this sort of thing, and like waving about in the playground. And it was it was a big no-no, wasn't it, back then?
You actually bought one.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, we had them delivered to the boarding house I was staying at, and we just used to whack fuck out of each other everywhere. You know.
not in Hero Turtles, do you see?
No, obviously. Yeah. Back then, you used to have to send a check off. There's none of this paying online, PayPal, or any of that nonsense.
Or a postal order.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, or just put money. You just put money in an envelope with it jangling around. It's in the same way that I sellotape 20p into birthday cards these days. I keep the tradition going. And then we had a bit of was it Supernaturals came out? Was it the I'm trying to remember the name of it now. Supernaturals.
It was Supernaturals, and there was Toxic Crusaders.
Right.
Everybody had enormous hopes of Toxic Crusaders. We just finished, we were working on Turtles very successfully.
Yeah.
This other toy product came along, Toxic Crusaders, and that only lasted a few issues.
Yeah. And was that after the Toxic Avenger?
I remember that. Yeah.
Really? It was after that trauma movie?
The trauma film.
Years and years after they did an animated series, didn't they? I think.
Oh, I never saw that. Yeah. Okay.
They did the same with like Rambo and like kind of adult properties, and then tried to make kids cartoons out of them.
Yeah.
Mr. T, I suppose, was about the same time, wasn't he, and all that sort of thing.
He had a Bigfoot cartoon.
Right. Was 1992.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And then there's a couple of other ones. Ring Raiders, which I know James worked on as well, didn't he?
Yes. Again, the toy product didn't take off. Take off planes, no? It didn't really take off. So that only lasted from 1989 to 1990.
Right. There was a cracking art on it, though, didn't it, as well?
It did, yes. Great stuff. Ian Kennedy did a lot of that.
That's what I was thinking of. I love his stuff. Yeah.
A real symbiote relationship there. If the toy line did good, the comic did good. And maybe vice versa. But if the toy line crashed, the comic was done for, basically.
We were doomed,
Okay. And then, I'll tell you what, I was looking at the Twitter stream of Orbital Comics recently, and they had pictures of, there was something going on there, usual. And they had, you could see the back shelves where they put the sort of back issues up on the shelves behind the counter. And there was a load of issues of Wildcat. And by the time I got into the shop 2 days later, they'd all sold out. And that was one of yours as well, wasn't it?
Yes, that was almost the last one that I launched. And I think it was just about the best one.
Yeah.
I had a lot of experience by that time. And I knew the right people to get to write the stories and the right artists. And we had a really talented team doing it. And I think it worked very well. We had the concept of one storyline throughout the whole comic, but different adventures within that storyline.
Okay, yep.
And we had some nice characters called Kitten McGee, Lona, Turbo Jones. It seemed to work well, but it was at the time when comics were in decline.
Yeah.
So it was launched really at the wrong time.
They're like gold dust trying to find them on eBay these days. I think they're very well thought of as well by collectors, you know.
They are, aren't they? Yes.
Yeah.
It's more popular now than it was then.
We've all got money now, Barry. We're all grown up.
Yeah.
But yes, I think Wildcat was just about the best thing that I did.
Yeah. So what was it that spurred you on? Getting to the end of that, Barry, but what spurred you on to write your books about your editorship and your involvement in comics? And
money, you know. Well, after I finished on the comics, just about the same time that I finished on the comics, the Daily Mirror got in touch with me and asked me if I wanted to write a football story for them.
Ah, yes.
So yeah. I invented a character called Scorer, which ran in the Daily Mirror for 22 years, 6 days a week.
Yeah.
And that kept me going once I'd finished on the comics.
Yeah. That kept me going in my younger years with a few of the bikini shots, I've got to tell you, Barry.
So once Score finished, I didn't really have anything to do, so I thought I should write some books.
Right. So has it been fun remembering it all? And, you know.
It was difficult sometimes to remember everything, but
yeah.
I don't think I did too bad considering how long ago it was.
Yeah, I mean, I devoured it. That the Comic Heroes book. I read it in a day. Brilliant. Loved it. Yeah. Is that your favourite one? Or?
The first one I did was Real Roy the Rovers stuff, which was the story of Roy the Rovers. And the second one, Comic Book Hero, was about all the other comics.
Okay, yeah. I mean, the thing I really notice about it is that you've kept lots of stuff. There's like notes that you've made. There's running orders of stories. There's innumerable photographs in there. There's loads of photographs of, you know, things that, like you being flattened by Big Daddy and all this sort of thing. Yeah, you know, there's lots of that sort of thing going on, isn't there?
I did keep a lot of stuff. I'm a bit of a hoarder, much to my wife's annoyance.
You and me both. Yeah. Yeah. I've got a house full of annuals now.
I've only got two or three annuals left, but someone took them.
Well, not grass. Yeah.
Yeah.
So is it?
But both books, Comic Book Hero and Real War and the Rover stuff, are still on sale. There's still time to get it on Amazon or wherever.
So, yeah, I ordered mine from Amazon. Yeah,
so
it is. Yeah.
Where else can you get it? Is it Amazon? Is that the best place to get it from then?
You can order it in bookshops. They tend not to have them on their shelves, but you can order them there.
Yeah.
Are you or anywhere online? Well,
are you on the Kindle or anything like that, Barry? Or
yes, I believe it is. Yeah.
Ah, there you go.
It's published by Pitch Publishing, and if you look at their site, you can see how to download it.
Brilliant.
Nice.
Now you're also a recent Twitter convert, aren't you? You're quite active on there, dude. I've got to tell you, I put up on the run up to the show. I put quite over the last few weeks. I've been putting up panels that have really made me chuckle or I've enjoyed from your comics. And I know we've had quite a few back and forwards, and a lot of people are chiming in on those conversations, aren't they? Yeah. You know?
Yes, it's great. It's great for me, really. It's a great boost for me because it keeps me going. It keeps me young, remembering all these occasions. I do get asked some questions, which sometimes I don't know the answer to.
But, yeah.
Most times I can answer, and it's great that people have still got an interest in what we did all those years ago.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. They were so widely read by people who don't read comics now, you know. Mm. Everyone read comics as a kid, didn't they? Everyone.
Oh, yeah. It was a big thing in a child's life.
Yeah, yeah. Girls, boys, whoever would read comics back then. It wasn't something that was 30-something, 40-something-year-old blokes, you know, in comic shops now, but... Yeah.
Yes, they've graduated to that, haven't they? Now?
Yeah. Do you find that do you get people talking about the impact your comics had on them, you know, over the years?
Yes, they say some very nice things to me that you made my growing up so happy. And this
That's
sort
nice.
Of thing.
Yeah.
And I do get some lovely compliments paid, which is very good for the old boy.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice. Well, I'm sure after this you're going to get plenty more compliments.
Definitely. Yeah,
I know there's been some absolute gems of information that I did not know. Yeah. I mean, I'll love you forever for Stormforce. So there you go.
Ducks. Just send money. That's fine.
Why does everyone that I love say that to me? So where can people find you on Twitter then? Or on social media?
Barry Editor 1. Barry spelled B-A-R-R-I-E. At Barry Editor 1.
Nice.
Do you have a website as well, Barry? Or...
Sorry?
Do you have a website as well? Or
no.
No. Okay.
No, I can't afford a website.
Yeah.
Yeah, so follow Barry on Twitter and be sure to pick up his books because they're fascinating gold mines of information.
Yeah.
As was this. Thank you very much for joining us this week, Barry. It's been amazing.
Cheers, Barry. It's been a pleasure. Been a pleasure talking to you.
Oh. We've had an absolute pleasure reading annuals. We've been reading annuals for the last few weeks non-stop, haven't we, guys?
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
And swapping each other's panels. And, yeah.
They don't make annuals like that anymore, you know.
They don't.
I sent these guys a photo of you working in an office with a couple other chaps that was in one of the annuals. So maybe I'll tweet that to you if you haven't got it anyway.
I think I know the one you mean.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't got the annual that is in anymore because someone took them all.
I like to think of your offices as lots of typewriters, lots of working, a reasonable amount of smoking, and the odd bottle of scotch in the bottom drawer. Is that a good way?
Oh, not at all. No, it was gin, not scotch.
That's how comics should be, Barry. That's how it should be, mate. Yeah.
I had a beautiful drink. I had a beautiful drinks cupboard, but one day we were burgled and they stole all my drink.
Oh, no. Oh, God. Terrible.
The good old days of a drinks cabin in the office.
Yeah. Things were hard, you know, in those days.
Yeah. Think of all the artwork they could have taken. They'd be millionaires by now, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I wish we'd have kept the artwork.
Yeah.
So much of it was destroyed, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, I was at a comic mart about a year ago and they were selling Robot Archie artwork and stuff. Yeah, you still see little bits floating about, don't you? You know?
Yes, when they were destroying artwork, one story I insisted they didn't destroy was the Robot Archie one.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Real.
So that was all kept, fortunately. It's still there somewhere.
For somebody who's you know, you were seeing this amazing artwork coming, it must have been heartbreaking seeing it all being thrown away and using to mop up beer spills and stuff like that, you know, as we've heard.
We were ordered to go down to the vaults and throw all the artwork away because they'd made negatives of every page.
I see, yeah.
And it was a heartbreaking job.
Oh, yeah.
But we did try to keep the ones we thought would be really valuable.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Oh, God. Well, that's a bit of a downer to end it on. Yeah. So,
oh, yes.
So what's next? What's next, Barry? What you got planned next, mate?
Book number 3 is on the go.
Brill. Okay. Nice.
That's a bit about comics and a bit about other things that I did.
Brill.
Nice one.
So when's the plan to release that one?
It won't be just yet a while. I'm still writing it, but I'm 2/3 of the way through it.
Nice. So people have they got time to get the first 2 books. Yeah.
Yes, I've still got lots of more photographs to go into this 3rd book, so that's great.
Oh, brilliant. Plenty more to come. Thanks again for joining.
Number 4, you know. Number four will be about this interview.
Oh, yes.
Oh, God.
Some photographs I'll send you, but don't share them. Okay. Barry, this has been an absolute pleasure, mate. We've been really looking forward to this, to chat to you. Yeah.
This is stuff
that people don't know about. They need to know about the history of British comics. People lark on about American comics, but we don't dig enough into, you know, the beautiful artwork and, you know, the stories that were told in weekly comics in the UK. Yeah.
Yeah, I was very lucky to work through the golden age of comics. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, cool.
So, there you go, folks. There you go. What an interview that was. The information that turned up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Such a gold mine, isn't he, of talking about all those sort of historic books and, you know, no one remembers these comics anymore and they were fucking amazing.
Yeah.
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 You only got those fucking readers' numbers, the amount of.
Imagine. Yeah.
And
because like, what you saying about Savage Dragon the other week? It was like.
Like 3,500 or something.
Yeah.
And it's so good. It's so good as well. People need to buy it, you know. No matter how many times we all bleat on about stuff, it doesn't seem to lift the numbers,
no,
you know?
No.
Yeah.
Now, we were talking, obviously, a bit about. There was a few jokes going around about the annuals that we've got.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, just looking. Just flicking through them and just seeing the quality of the artwork and the strips in those books.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that I really recommend that some people check out some of these old.
If you're in like a charity shop, you often find like Lion or, you know, Eagle or, yeah. you know, old 2000 ADs or yeah. Star Lords and this sort of thing. They're worth picking up. They're yeah. really good stuff yeah. in them. You know?
I mean, with the problem with a lot of these sort of annuals and covers, the covers of these annuals aren't necessarily the most appealing, so open it up, look through, and
yeah.
that'll sell you on it most of the time, because the quality of the artwork, so many brilliant artists.
It's a real snapshot of British culture at the time as well, what's hot, and
because
you get like photo articles and stuff popping up and advertisements, and it's really really interesting little thing to pick up.
Are
so thank you.
You
again,
might be stretched to get one over in the States if you listen to this over there.
Yeah, there might be some available on eBay. You never know.
So there you go. That was some
brilliant
knowledge
stuff.
Bombs dropped on you.
Me out about having his annuals in my house.
Yeah.
I'm never giving them back. They're never. I'm never returning them.
No, he's never getting them back, especially the Big Daddy one. Now, do we have any shout outs this week, gents?
I've got a couple.
Go on.
First one is on Friday night. I went to the No Brow event at Gosh Comics. No Brow 10 is out. No Brow Studio Dreams. For those who have paid attention to No Brow over the years, they used to bring out a sort of illustration, comic, anthology, oversized book every so often. They haven't done for the last couple of years, but what with No Brow being 10 years old this year, they brought this out. It's absolutely gorgeous. I pre-ordered one extra one, because if you pre-order, you get the sort of special edition hardcover. But for the soft cover, it's 152 pages and it's only 18 quid. And it's got bundles of just amazing illustrations, just absolute gorgeous, right up the No Brow street. But for 18 quid, it's nothing. You go to nobrow.net, you can get a copy. I'm not getting a kickback on that, so there you go. So go and buy it anyway. And the other one I want to tell everyone to buy is Mad Magazine. Mad Magazine has had a bit of a reboot and a relaunch. I've subscribed to it on Comixology. Yeah, and it's a big shout out to my mate Bob Fingerman, who is living the dream by being in Mad Magazine. He's a big fan of it, and his stuff is killer in it. Anyone who looks at my Twitter stream today will see that I put a couple of panels out for it. But yeah, has there ever been a period where we've needed Mad Magazine more than now? And I've got to tell you, now's the time. Brilliant stuff. Have a look for that one. There you go. They're my two.
Nice. I just want to give a shout out to the mighty Stacey's Pop Culture Parlor.
Oh, yes.
And Barry Nugent from Geek Syndicate, who... yesterday or this morning, 9 o'clock this morning as we speak, this is a Sunday, they had just finished their 24-hour podcast for the British Heart Foundation, I believe it was.
Right.
They achieved their target, they made their money and then some, and and I was on there for one of their early shifts, just being frank and honest. And
what did you talk about? I haven't listened to this yet, because I was sitting seeing the Avengers, but you promised to send me it.
Yes. Yes, I think I came across okay. I hope I came across okay.
Oh no, what did you say?
I didn't say anything. Well, no. So it was a quiet hour. No, I mean, when I was on, there was a slight sound delay. So that I had those moments where you'd sort of say a joke and there'd be an uncomfortable silence, and then
I get that all the time.
Yeah, I know. So. But it was a real good laugh, and I hope they did well for the rest of the day. They had some amazing guests on there throughout the day, and I believe Stacey's going to be taking all that audio. She's probably recovering now as we speak, but she's going to break down a lot of that audio and put it in episodes and stuff. So
and of course, the thing that me and Dan were really interested in hearing about is did you talk about us?
Yeah, it's a little bit. I actually did something stupid.
Oh no.
I said that if they made their target, I'd do a video of me doing a dance.
Oh, yes. Oh, oh my God.
We have to split that total. Make that shortfall up.
Yeah.
And I don't know what I've done.
No, what kind of dance are you going to do? You like to sing, you like to sing a bit. Maybe you could do both, couldn't you?
Yeah, yeah. I'm toying with Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs, but I don't. Oh,
Jesus.
Oh God! Can we choose a song?
Why don't you dance with me? Go on.
No, that's not going to happen, is it? No, you're the one in this fucking trouble, not us.
Please.
And sinking into quicksand, clutching us two.
Please help me. Yeah.
The foot red as you go under. You never see quicksand in movies anymore, do you? Remember the problem in it? Yeah.
No.
It was terrifying after Kroll, watching quicksand in Kroll.
There's a lot of things terrifying in Kroll.
Yeah.
I'd see the movie in itself.
Yeah. Liam Neeson's acting is quite terrifying.
It never gets much better, does it? Let's face it.
I watched the.
You wash your mouth out.
The Commuter. Fuck me.
Have you seen that?
No.
Okay.
Is it good?
It's all right.
Yeah,
okay. There's not enough explosions and shooting in it for my liking.
Is that what your normal commute is like, though, Dan?
No, mine's got a lot more anger in it.
Yours is more like The Raid.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Anyway, it's getting on. Shall we recommend some comics before we sign off, gents? Who wants to go first?
Okay, you go first, V, because I'm. Yours is slightly controversial.
Well, I got a couple of short ones. I'm going to keep it short and sharp.
Okay.
But yeah, I got sent a book from Singing Dragon Books.
Yeah,
they've put out a lot of good titles.
Long
I know Tony and Dan.
One of theirs,
yeah,
isn't it? Yeah,
yeah. And I believe you did Pain is Really Strange. Didn't you, Tony?
Was that the one I did? Was it?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. And the one I've got is Anxiety is Really Strange.
It's not that strange. I hear about it all the time.
There's a lot of anxiety sort of stories and books and comics out at the moment. But this
giving
one,
me anxiety.
But this one is very different. This is
right.
I mean, I hadn't read Pain is Really Strange, but these are more like a scientific graphic novel in a sense.
They're like medical textbooks.
Yeah,
yeah. And, that's what I like about them. They're treating it from the point of view of helping people, aren't they?
Yeah, completely.
I mean, you fold out the back cover in this, and there's a whole load of references. There's over 50 references that they make through the book.
Okay.
They're all backed up.
Yeah. To find out more.
If you're tackling this, you need to kind of, get it right. And,
finding out people help. And it's wonderfully sort of illustrated. By Sophie Standing. I don't know if she did the first one, but these are from Steve.
She did do. Yeah, there's been two more, isn't there?
Yeah, Steve Haynes is the author. And it's basically breaking down the, not symptoms, but, the anxiety and how people feel. And there's so many different ways of interpreting it and how you can think about it in your mind. And there's some different forms anxiety can take. There's some brilliant illustrations that sort of wonderfully illustrate it and help you understand more. And this is a book that's more about understanding rather than experiences, I would say.
Yeah.
And
we don't need another one about your boyfriend / girlfriend / partner leaving you and you feeling upset.
Yeah.
So this is what we need.
And that's why a book like this is great to have. And if you want to understand more about it, things like panic disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder and things like that, and how the brain sort of figures it out. It's hard to really describe because it does feel like a textbook in a way.
Yeah.
Very much so, because it's very information driven.
Because the previous ones were like cross sections of things. And
that's exactly like this.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's breaking down like how people feel or like how there's certain in different cultures and stuff. What's one of the best bits? Like, did you know that there are emotions you have not experienced yet? I knew this is going to be dangerous asking you, Tony.
Oh, God.
To fully know an emotion takes practice, understanding, and community. Culture turns a confused morass of feelings into a form we can inhabit. And this is a bit... In German, have you heard of Schadenfreude?
Yes.
In English, there is no equivalent word to the German Schadenfreude, which is... to basically package,
Freuder, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh well, done. Yeah. Joy at others' discomfort. I'm going to use that word all the time now,
because it's a phrase for it,
almost daily.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've been framed.
Well, that line you said there about not understanding, not being able to experience emotion without practice. I'm not sure that's quite true, is it?
To fully know an emotion, not to
right.
You mean to identify emotion that you're feeling?
Yeah, I think that's
so
what
you're thinking. What am I feeling here?
That's all.
I mean,
I don't know
how I feel within from minute to minute when I talk to you two.
Don't you?
Well, yeah, it's just arousal, just really
disgust. Disgust at your own arousal.
Disgust. oh dear. But all jokes aside, though, I can definitely see why Singing Dragon are putting out some great books, and this was I thought it was a good one to look at and see. I mean, I think I'm definitely going back to like Pain is Really Strange as well, because they are informative
I
think it's unfair to. No, I am sort of famously critical of books about anxiety because I'm. I know this got sent to me by John, and I said, look, I'd rather throw myself out a window than read another book about anxiety. But I think it's fair to say that I get the catalogue sent through to me from Jessica, who runs Singing Dragon, Jessica Kingsley, and she sends me through the books that they produce, and they do cover an awful lot of areas where people need help. And I think a lot of those other areas are, you know, as valid as any other area that's covered. You know, My Shame, which is the book that we reviewed last year, it's an incredibly emotive story and moving story, but also a helpful story about people who suffered abuse and stuff. You know, there's a lot of things going on in the world that, and they do cover them all. They're a worthy company. You know what I mean? Sort of thing.
Yeah. Mm. And it says on the back, like, what is the difference between fear and excitement? How do the mind and body make emotions? And when can anxiety be good? Because that's something it covers. Like,
it's anticipation.
And it breaks down the emotions and how to sort of, you know, identify them and use it in a positive way. And I thoroughly recommend it, especially if you want to understand more about these conditions and things like that. It is really helpful. And like Dan said, they've got like stuff in the back to so you can follow up and get some more knowledge and stuff. So I was really thoroughly, and it's a nice printed little book as well.
It's like the old No-Brow comic series they did. It's got a sort of card cover, isn't it? It's one of those sort of comics. Yeah, I know.
But I'm definitely with you on this, Tony and Vince, that if you're going to tackle an issue of this kind, I think the least he can do is put a website or a telephone number of people who suffer with this kind of thing can go to, or further resources. I think that's incumbent on the author to try and do that.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's probably me being old and grumpy, but I do hear about a lot of people who have anxiety. And I think we need, it's like a lot of things, there's a lot more things that should also be spoken about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the problem with it, and it's the same with any sort of thing, is when there's more of it, a certain word will be in the zeitgeist.
Yes.
And or you almost get a bit of a cultural backlash, which shouldn't happen.
I said to somebody recently, I said, I've got a bit of anxiety about something. And they went, oh God, like I was clinically diagnosing myself with anxiety. I said, no, anxiety is just an adjective.
Yeah.
It can be on all levels. It can be worrying about whether my internet's going to work this afternoon down to something that's sort of crippling and stopping you leave the house.
Yeah.
You know,
there's
all levels of it.
There are levels of it. There's proper.
Same
extreme
as anger and sadness. And,
exactly. Exactly.
You know, everything.
Yeah, so books like this are important, and I'm definitely going to check out more of Steve Haynes' stuff because he puts it across really well. I don't know how it is in the other ones, Tony, but
it's a bit like it reminds me of what Scott McCloud did in Understand Comics. It's a similar sort of
But it uses the graphic sort of medium really well in order to tell that story. So there you go. You can go to singingdragon.com and get hold of this, and it's Anxiety is Really Strange, and it's out now. There you go. That's my one. Oh, another short one. There's a new issue of Baby Teeth, and it's like one of the best comics about at the moment. So if you're not getting Baby Teeth, then something's wrong with you. There you go.
I'm not getting that. So there is
something wrong with you. Yeah. Well, we know that. You've got two to do, haven't you?
Yeah.
D-Man, go on. Do you want to do your first one, and then I'll slide between you?
Yeah, sure. The first one is issue one of The Claws, sent through by Richard. We met Richard on the Comic Con the other week.
Leamington,
yeah.
Lovely guy. Top bloke. And a listener.
The synopsis for the comic is, the good guys always win, right? But what happens when supervillains of New Olympus unite and a hero falls? The Claws in an intense and gripping comic from the writer Rich Carrington and artist J.C. Grand that asks the question, what happens when the bad guys win? I think this title is actually available on Comic House.
Is it? Okay,
I'll have to check.
Yeah.
But essentially, similar story like in Old Man Logan, if the kind of the heroes have won and they've taken bits of the city for themselves, and how it transpires. It's a great little read. Nice take on it. I do like when the superhero stories are slightly subverted. And
yeah,
check it out on Comixology. Yeah, Comic House. Cool. I've got to fucking get out of that habit.
Only because we were talking about Comixology earlier, weren't we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tony.
Mild frenzy. Not my sexual state, but a comic book.
That would be like your Jaeger name in Pacific Rim.
Yeah. Oh, frenzy.
It used to be a lot of frenzy. Now it's sort of just for it's reasonably
a
mild.
Mild.
Yeah, I'm a bit older now. Yeah, it takes longer. The you two gets me going longer.
Yeah.
The volume one by Iqbal Ali, who I think we met at London, didn't we? I think we met at London Super Comic Con. It's all written by him. It's 113 pages long, in black and white, and it's art by Alexander Bozic, Franster Yevgeny, Priscilla Gripper, and Mario Mono. How's that? I didn't do too badly.
Oh, you did well there.
Yeah, it's I picked out. There's a number of stories in it. I picked out some of my favourites. They're all pretty good. Moving Ears. This one is art by Alexander Bosic, and it's a man at work who is constantly ridiculed for the way his large sticking out ears move whenever he's eating. He's in the sort of works canteen, people pointing at him and laughing. So he starts to wearing a hat, but even his hat begins to move when he's eating. Probably he goes to the doctor, and the doctor gives him a pill that will paralyse his ears. And then is a twist in it that I won't spoil, but that's quite a funny one.
Did you just yawn?
Yeah, sorry, yeah. It's been a long week.
Tony's had a hard week.
Yes.
Yes. It's been a long week, sorry. Human version. You saying yawn's making me want to yawn again. It's like that thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like that.
Sorry.
Franster, this has got nothing, this is no impact, it's not impactful on the comic at all, it's very enjoyable and will not make you yawn. The artwork in the human version is by Franster Yevgeny. It's got some real sort of lovely Mebius style artwork, android design, sort of maybe a sort of ghost in the shell, kind of like almost like a baby's face or a hairless human face on a robot android body, if you know what I mean. And it's a woman that fears that the world is a computer program, even though her doctor tries to convince her otherwise. And she drives her car so fast, and she drives straight at a wall, she arrives at something she didn't expect, and it's really beautifully told. Really interesting stuff. If Crocodiles Had Wings, art by Alexander Bozic again, and that's exactly what it says in the title.
God, that sounds terrifying.
What if the world's crocodiles could fly about and eat people? Brilliant stuff, brilliant stuff. Long Drive, which I really liked actually, art by Mario Mono. A man is surrounded by people who look exactly like him, and he drives off into the desert to get away with them. Really clever. It's got a bonus, a longer form feature story by Iqbal, which he drew as well, which I haven't got around to yet. But I have to say, looks pretty good. It's available on Amazon, so you can buy it. Mild Frenzy by Iqbal Ali on Amazon. But if you go to www.mildfrenzy.com, it's well worth a look, actually. A creator I hadn't really read before, and a lot of artists who I hadn't seen, but do some really nice black and white work. Yeah, really good stuff. It's not, I don't know why, it just strikes me as that sort of little hinterland between small press and indie. It's a lot of it's like really class, and there's a couple of raw edges, but yeah, very good, I think. That's my one.
Nice.
Awesome. And the last one I was quickly going to give a shout out to. I bought myself volume one of the classic G.I. Joe reprints, and I've been working my way through that, written by Larry Hammer, Herb Trimpery, and Stephen Grant.
Okay, cool.
There's a whole host of great creators on this. It's a real fun read. I was trying to track down the first issues of the UK ones, but I don't think they're in print. So I might have to do a bit more looking. So if anyone could help us out with that, that's greatly appreciated.
Okay. Yeah.
Obviously, they're running as Action Force in the UK, but I think they reprinted it in the States as like G.I. Joe, the International Missions or something.
Okay.
But, yeah. I'm not sure if they've been reprinted. But yeah, the old classic G.I. Joe stuff is fantastic. It's weird, kind of like the same we were talking with Barry about like the toy lines and comics being made, and they're kind of like symbiote entities that kind of feed off one another. And there's a great, we've mentioned it so many times on the show, that Netflix series, the Toys That Made Us.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And they did the toy line of the G.I. Joe figures, and
yeah,
They basically had the Snake Eyes one, which was just black, and they didn't paint it, and that's the only way they could come in under budget. Yeah. And that was the most was the most popular figure.
Yeah,
every kid loved that one.
That's a good series. That is the Toys That Made.
Yeah, it's really good. I'd really recommend anyone to watch that. It's a fantastic series.
I'll tell you what's good on there. Have you seen Happy yet?
No, you were saying about this.
Oh,
yeah.
Fucking hell, that's good.
I'll see if I can get that.
So good. Yeah.
It looks refreshingly mental.
Yeah.
I did watch One Punch Man all the way through. That's fun.
Is that good?
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. It's the animation is just fucking phenomenal. The fight sequences are just, great. It's got some real life. Some of the humor doesn't translate too well, I've got to say. But I think that's the same as the comic. But on the whole, it's a real fun watch.
Ah, nice. I'll have to add that to my list.
Yeah.
Tony, did you have one more, or are we all done?
No, I'm done. Yeah.
We Brilliant. Are all done. There you go, folks. That's another...
We're out, bitches.
That's another good episode in the bag. Hopefully you enjoyed it. If you did, if you didn't, or if you want to know more, there's several different ways that you can get in touch with us. You can email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. If you've got any art or letters for the awesome comic.
Yeah, I was going to say a shout out for the letters.
Yeah, we need a couple of letters, don't we?
Yeah.
We're coming up to the print deadline on this one, so we need to get those letters in.
Yes, over the next week. As we're speaking now, if you listen to this months down the line, sorry, you're late.
Yeah, but, fuck you. But big shout out to Nick on the art. Then he's fucking pulled it out of the bag. Yeah. Something rotten on this. It's looking brilliant. Yeah.
We are going to print the sort of end of the first week of May. So, if you want to send us a letter and ask us something about any of the strips going on in Awesome Comics.
And if you ask us out on a date.
Yeah, why not? Then send the email to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Now, follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod. We got a groovy set of guests coming up on the run-up to episode 150, which we've got some plans for.
Yeah. Is there someone at the door?
don't start that.
That's going to be gold.
Yeah, but follow us on Twitter. Well, you don't have to do the editing. That's why.
Well, see, if I can get clued in on the editing, I can try.
Right, okay. We'll have a talk off air. If you do Facebook, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you want to talk about comics or talk about making comics, collecting, whatever, then go to Awesome Comics Talk, the place where it's nothing but comics talk, no sales pitches, anything like that, apart from our own, but that's because it's our group, so we can do what we want.
Do we like?
Yeah. We're monsters.
I've had to delete a number of posts this week, because I'm sure we all done this, because it's literally you're just promoting your own product. We can't have that.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with your products.
No.
But the group is set up to, talk and discuss and, it's not a sales block, is it?
So, it's like a kind of a talk down the pub. And if someone starts hijacking the conversation to talk about something they're selling, that's not what we want.
Yeah. So there you go.
And we will delete it ruthlessly.
Yep. But what we do want is you to keep coming back every week, folks. So thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you left us a review on iTunes, thank you. If you haven't, please do. It helps get the word out. Subscribe to us. Go on, subscribe. If you listen on iTunes, go on, do that. Tony will do a dance for you. No, he won't. but if you listen to us on the Stitcher...
Sorry, I dropped out, guys. Sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah. That's all right. No one noticed, Tony. Because I'm a pro. And if you... though, take that how you will. If you listen to us on the Stitcher network, the Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
Well, three. Would you like me to read them all out?
Okay.
Yeah.
Come on.
Pod Codename Barracuda, Pod Texas Jack and the Snake Chief, and my favourite, Pod Mekon. There you go.
And if you're worried about Tony's mental health, then just let us know at awesomecomicpod@gmail.com. It's been a long week.
Write a letter. And diagnose me.
Snapdragon's new comic, Tony is Strange.
amazing. But thank you for listening, as always. Where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
Ezo, yes, E-Z-O-H-Y-Z. And I have had 2 weeks of just absolutely brutal work. So I promise there'll be a couple of articles appearing this week at neverminanything.blogspot.co.uk. There you go.
You don't owe anyone anything, Tony. Just
babes.
Just be you. Be safe.
Thanks,
that's
babes.
All I care. Yeah. Are you being safe?
Just keep it real.
I like to keep it safe.
Yeah. There's nothing more fun than safe fun. So where can people find you online, Dan?
I'm on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Yeah.
Slide that down a bit, and it came across as quite arousing.
Yeah. I should put some saxophones.
Got subvert expectations, like Avengers Infinity War. Which you should go and see right now.
You should.
Please go and see it.
Yeah. And you can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. Thank you for listening, folks. Have a brilliant week. And from Dan, Tony, and myself,
stay awesome.
Yeah, just stay awesome. Just do that. Tony, say it.
Awesome.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.